أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Verse number 216 أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم كتب عليكم القتال وهو كره لكم وعسى أن تكرهوا شيئا وهو خير لكم وعسى أن تحبوا شيئا وهو شر لكم والله يعلم وأنتم لا تعلمون. Warfare has been prescribed for you, though it is repulsive to you. Yet it may be that you dislike something while it's good for you, and it may be that you love something while it's bad for you, and Allah knows and you do not know. This verse, as I said, it turns into a new subject from what previously was we were discussing. It's a prescription for, or instruction, or command for warfare, fighting. And to compare this with the verse in Surah Hajj, which says, أُذَنَ لِلَّذِينَ يُقَاتَلُونَ بَأَنَّهُمْ ظُلَمُوا. Permission is issued for those who are fought against because they are wronged. We will see that there it is a permission for fighting where people are fought against. Here it is unconditionally the prescription for fighting is issued. However, looking into the following verse, we would see that it is, again, when Muslims are attacked, and then they want to either defend or retaliate to prevent further attacks, that this sort of the fighting and warfare is prescribed for the believers. Now, there are different opinions of the companions of the Prophet and also the Tabi'un and Mufassirun about this. I will mention it. Now, the first thing is that why it says, وَهُوَ كُرْهٌ لَكُمْ, it is distasteful to you. While we know that in the beginning, especially after the conquests, qital was very somehow desirable for many Muslims. They went to qital, they went to fighting in different quarters from different directions to gain booties and lots of wealth, actually, because of that, came into Muslim territories. And that is why many exodus have said that there are things which are repulsive to you, but it is better for you. They say it brings you ghanima and booties. Now, if we want to remove ourselves away from that historical issue, why it says huwa kurhun lakum, for two reasons, and why it says it is better for you, again, we will see what the reason is. It is kurhun lakum, as I said, last week, Allama Tawatabai has mentioned two reasons for it. And one is that in fighting, of course, there is harm, injuries, killings, danger of death. So it is always undesirable for people to go to battlefield. Then he says, he brings a second view in, which I think it is more interesting. And closer to reality, because for the believers, fighting, which ended in Shahada, was not quite undesirable. They really liked to go and fight and receive the blessing of Shahada. It's at the beginning, yeah, it may have been like that, but later on, when this idea of Shahada came in and martyrdom, the sawab for it, people were actually desiring for this door of jihad to be opened. Now, he says that because of the teachings of the Quran, because of the nature of the faith, the believers liked to treat everyone nicely and peacefully. They could not imagine that they would go and kill other people, whether for the sake of booties or territories or to force them to enter into Islam. They couldn't imagine that. And it was very undesirable for them. However, Allah says that at times it becomes necessary for keeping your dignity, for preserving your faith, for defending your territories against those who want to come and fight against you. So you have to, at times, if necessary, start this, proceed on fighting other people. So if we take it in this way, it means that you are not advised to fight other people, to force them to become Muslim. You are not advised to fight people to go and gain new territories and gain booties. However, if you are attacked, if there is a danger for your faith and for your territory, then of course it is something that is wajib upon you. It is compulsory that you have to do it. It's a command of Allah. It's not something that is left to your will. And we know that this is the case in every nation, in every culture. I mean, people take it as a dignity to go and fight for the sake of their country, their beliefs, whatever of them are attacked, is attacked. So it is not something which is singularly peculiar to Islam and bring it as holy war and jihad and things like that. It is something in human nature to defend themselves. However, as I said, because Muslims taught that they should not venture on this sort of defense, Allah is telling them, no, that is your duty, and even if it is distasteful, you وَهُوَ كُرْهٌ لَكُمْ, but so often happens that أَسَى أَن تَكْرَهُ شَيْئًا وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, you dislike something, but it is much better for you. Again, when we come to this sentence of the verse, أَسَى أَن تَكْرَهُ شَيْئًا وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, many exegetists have said that, yes, you dislike war, but it brings you one of the two good things, إِهْدَى الْحُسْنَيَيْنِ, either victory and غَنِيمَ, booties, or shahada and jannah and paradise. Now, we have certainly some discussions here about mentioning ghanima and booty here by some exegetes, that war is made because of the victory and booties. War is made here because of defense and because of dignity rather than booties of war. Yes, of course, booties of war is something which may come if victory comes, but it is not the sort of khair that Allah is talking about. What if Muslims are defeated all the time? So is it still khair? Of course, they say, yes, shahada is khair, but bringing booties in is a mentality of sort of Muslim, early Muslim generations after the companions, when they were actually expanding very fast, and they went really for battlefields, too many of them, not all of them, of course, to gain booties of war, which is something, even if someone goes for the booties of war, if they are killed, it's not regarded as shahada and martyrdom, isn't it? If someone goes to battlefield to gain booties or to gain wealth, that cannot be regarded as martyrdom if they are killed. وَأَسَىٰ أَن تُحِبُّ شَيْئًا وَهُوَ شَرٌ لَكُمْ, and you may like things like peace, like peaceful coexistence, but it may be not good for you because others don't like that peaceful coexistence. Others may come and take your country, take your territory, and defeat your faith. وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ أَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. Now, is this qital a fight initiated by Muslims, or a fight which is in defense of a battle which is initiated by others? Apparently, from all companions it is mentioned, and from all tabi'un, that this is the jihad, the kafa'i, the jihad which is compulsory on everyone, if no one takes it. If some people go to jihad and the duty is performed, then there is no duty on others. Like, for example, burial of Muslims. It is wajibul kafai. What kafai means? It means that if someone does it, it's sufficient and the duty is taken off others. But if no one does it, everyone is responsible for it. Now, here they say that this is al-wajibul kafai, means that if some group of people, some Muslims, do this jihad, it is taken off the shoulder of others. And if no one does it, then everyone is responsible and has committed sin. And they take it as a jihad that every year Muslims should wage to go and open new territories, or in their words, to call people to Islam. However, among the Tabi'un, there was one, there's one very interesting view from Atta ibn Abi Rabah, who was a student of Ibn Abbas. He says that if we take it faradun ala al-kifaya, and that is to go and open new territories, it was only for the companions. After companions, this door is closed, and no one is allowed to start such a battle. Now, this is very much in line with Shi'i views, which says that this is only permissible if an imam, the infallible imam, leads the Muslim community. He should tell them, you can go and, for example, call other people to Islam. Otherwise, it is not permissible. Apparently, Atta and people like him, they saw that at the time of Umayyads and Abbasids, this warfare, this matter had become a sort of a source of wealth and expansion of territories like any other kingdom and empires. And he actually wanted to somehow limit this to the time of companions so that the conquests which were made at the time of the Umayyads and Abbasids and later on were somehow restricted and contained, because they were really not for the sake of converting people to Islam. It was for the sake of booties and things like that. Now, of course, we can't say that every Muslim who took part in these battles did it for that, because there were many sincere Muslims who really thought that they are going to call people to Islam. But we know that faithful companions of the Prophet, like Amirul Mu'minin, like Imam Hassan, like Imam Hussein, they never took part in such conquests, and they didn't want to actually be regarded as those who go to other countries and fight and want to somehow, in their opinion, of course, convert people to Islam. Anyhow, we cannot pass a sweeping judgment on companions, because many of these conquests happened at the time of companions, or the Tabu'un on others, and saying that they were really doing this for the sake of booties. Many of them really, really thought that they were doing it for the sake of call to Islam, calling other people to Islam. But we know that certainly the central governments, they were thinking more about the practical matters rather than matters of faith. As I said before, I think you remember this, that in Persia, the rate of conversion to Islam was so rapid that at the time of second caliph, an order, a command was issued that we would not accept conversions from Persians anymore. They have to remain in their religion, Zoroastrians, and they pay jizya. Because if they converted to Islam, they had to pay zakat rather than paying jizya. So they did not accept this. And for several decades, people in Persia were converting to Islam, and they were paying jizya. They didn't mind paying jizya as Zoroastrians or Ahlul Kitab, but they were converting to Islam. And this shows somehow the intentions were not so pure about such conquests. Now, apparently this verse is preparation for the following verse, which is a very important and very interesting verse here that we have in verse number 217. يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الشَّهْرِ الْحَرَامِ قِتَالٍ فِيهِ. They ask you concerning warfare in the holy month. يسألونك عن الشهر القتال فيه is a positive of شهر الحرام. They ask you regarding شهر الحرام, fighting in it, fighting in شهر الحرام. They are asking about that. قل قتال فيه كبير. Say it's an outrageous thing to fight in it. وصد عن سبيل الله وكفر به والمسجد الحرام. Now, this verse, depending where we stop, put a waqf on the words which are coming, changes meaning. Now, we can read it like this. قُلْ قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ. Say, fighting in the month of Haram is outrageous, and it is stopping from the path of God, and is a kufr and disbelief in God. And it's stopping people from Masjid al-Haram. We stop here. قُلْ قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ وَسَدٌ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَكُفْرٌ بِهِ وَالْمَسْجِدُ الْحَرَامِ. Now, we can read it in another way. يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الشَّهْرِ الْحَرَامِ قِتَالٍ فِيهِ قُلْ قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ. We stop here. Okay? So, say, fighting in شَهْرُ الْحَرَامِ is outrageous. However, there are other things which are more outrageous than that. وَسَدٌ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. So we start the sentence from here. وَسَدٌ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَكُفْرٌ بِهِ وَالْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ وَإِخْرَاجُ أَهْلِهِ مِنْهُ أَكْبَرُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. So, but to keep people from Allah's way and to be unfaithful to Him and to keep people from the holy mosque and to expel its people from it are more outrageous with Allah. وَالْفِتْنَةُ أَكْبَرُ مِنَ الْقَاتْلِ. And fitna is graver than killing. Whatever we translate this fitna, inshallah, we'll discuss that. وَلَا يَزَالُونَ يُقَاتِلُونَكُمْ حَتَّى يَرُدُّوكُمْ عَنْ دِينُكُمْ إِنِ اسْتَطَاعُوا. And they will not cease fighting you until they turn you away from your religion. وَمَنْ يَرْتَدِدْ مِنْكُمْ عَنْ دِينِهِ فَيَمُتْ وَهُوَ كَافِرٌ فَأُولَٰئِكَ حَبِطَتْ أَعْمَالُهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. And whoever of you turns away from his religion and dies faithless, they are the ones whose works have failed in this world and the hereafter. وَأُولَٰئِكَ أَصْحَابُ النَّارِ. They shall be the inmates of the fire and they shall remain in it forever. Now, why this is interesting is because of the sha'n al-nuzul of the verse and the way we are treated today in our modern world is exactly the same as this treatment of Muslims by kuffar. I mentioned why. It's actually a propaganda war here waged against Muslims by the mushrikun of Mecca, and it's very similar to what we are actually into the situation that we are in today. What happened? The Prophet sent Abdullah ibn Jahsh, his cousin, the brother of Zainab bint Jahsh, who was later on his wife, sent him on a sariyah, on a mission with eight of his companions, because the kuffar in Mecca were confiscating all the property of those who had migrated. And then, of course, if the property was not confiscated, the relatives who were there could actually get the proceeds of this property and send it over to Medina for them. However, anyone who left Mecca as a migrant, they confiscated everything and they did not let anyone to somehow use the proceeds of it. So the Prophet commanded that in retaliation for that, we go and seize their caravans and confiscate their property. This is a retaliation. When they stop, we stop. And this is how the Battle of Badr actually took place, isn't it? The Battle of Badr was not an initiation of jihad by the Prophet. He was going to confiscate the caravan, the business caravan, Abu Sufyan, and then the mushrikun found out and sent an army and a fighting took place. Otherwise, Muslims didn't want to fight. They just wanted to retaliate for their properties. And they didn't want to take more than what they had lost in Mecca. Now, this was a very dangerous mission. The Prophet sent Abdullah ibn Jahsh and 8 people very close to Mecca. On the way to Mecca and Taif, this was, of course, Mushrikun territory. Had they been seized, certainly they would have been killed. And told them they had 2 errands. One was that to certainly see what are the movements of the Mushrikun, whether they intend to attack or not, because they always saw the attack imminent. And the other, if they saw any business caravan, they seize and confiscate it. Now, they went, of course, and it was a very, they thought that this is not 90% shahada in it. They didn't think that there is any victory in such a mission. However, very bravely they went there, and they saw a caravan. Of course, a very small caravan led by someone called Ibn al-Hazrami. And they seized the caravan and killed Ibn al-Hazrami. And there were other 2 people they captured. However, when did this happen? It was very murky. It was the last day of Jumadul Akhira or the first day of Rajab. Rajab is, of course, Shahrul Haram. And it's called Shahrul Haram, Shahrul Asam, Rajabul Asam, because in that month, the clattering of the Asam means death. The clattering of the swords were quieted and silenced. There was no war in that. Now, this was since the time of Ibrahim alayhi salam. And of course, everyone were culturally, at least if not religiously, they were keeping and preserving this custom very dearly, because it was very convenient for them. It was a matter of convenience in Rajab and in those 3 months of Dhul-Qa'dah and Dhul-Hajjah and Muharram. They could do their business freely. No one would attack them. And also they could go to Hajj and all these things. Now, Abdullah ibn Jahsh and his companions, they thought that this is the last day of Jumad al-Thani. But it happened that it was the first day of Rajab. No, Maraji had difference in that, isn't it? In moon sighting and other things. And since the beginning of Islam, this moon sighting was a problem. No. And don't think that it's something new, and we have to somehow unite everyone on the moon sighting. Now, it transpired that it was the first day of Rajab. And the Mushrikun started to, they brought the captives and they killed Ibn al-Hazrami and they brought caravan to Mecca, Mushrikun started to say, Muharram, the Prophet, peace be on him, is not respecting Shahrul Haram. And this was a very bad propaganda against the Prophet, because this was something respected by everyone. It was human rights, like our today. Muslims are not respecting human rights, okay? So Muhammad was not respecting Shahrul Haram. And they made a hue and cry against it. And even the people in Medina were shaken. Really? Are we not respecting Shahrul Haram? Our fathers all have been respecting Shahrul Haram. This is the son of Ibrahim alayhi salam. So, yas'alunaka an Shahrul Haram. They ask you about Shahrul Haram. Now, they themselves disrespected Shahrul Haram by nasi. In Surah Tawbah, you remember we discussed this, إِنَّمَا النَّسِيءُ زِيَادَةٌ فِي الْكُفْرِ. Whenever it was convenient for them and expedient, they postponed Shahrul Haram. They said, okay, in Rajab we fight, then the next month, Shawwal, we don't fight, for example. They postponed it. Now that this happened, they started to make a huge propaganda war against the Prophet. يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الشَّهْرِ الْحَرَامِ قِتَالٍ فِيهِ. They ask you regarding Shahrul Haram. Is it permissible to fight in Shahrul Haram, in the month of Haram? Now, Allah very clearly says that, yes, it is قُلْ قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ. Depending, as I said, where we stop in the flow of the sentences, it is outrageous. It is forbidding people from stopping from path of Allah. It is kufr to Allah. It is stopping people from Masjidul Haram. Okay? It's all true. nowadays as well, if Muslims say something, it's very interesting, and it's a mistake, okay, or do something which is a mistake, our mistakes are not forgiven by the media. Wow, Muslims are doing this, Muslims are doing that. However, many things happen on the other side, and they somehow justify it. We know that this is the sort of propaganda war, and this is exactly what was happening at the time. يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الشَّهْرِ الْحَرَامِ بِتَالٍ فِي. Now, when this happened, when the caravan came, it transpired that it was first of Rajab, and it was month of Haram. The Prophet sent compensation, blood compensation for Ibn al-Hazrami. Said, yes, this was wrong. They made a mistake, all right. They made a mistake. They shouldn't have fought in Shahr al-Haram. He sent compensation. He freed the captives. He sent back all the properties of the caravan to Mecca. And this is a very telling and interesting matter, that we stand by the values, of course. It's not something that because we have taken something from you, no matter in what way, by what means, we do it. No. The Prophet sent all the properties back, compensated, gave blood compensation for Ibn al-Hazrami, sent back the captives, and then started a counter-propaganda, or the verse start a counter-propaganda. Now, okay, this happened. It was a mistake. But what are you doing? What did you do? You say that you keep the respect of month of Shahr al-Haram, right? But what you are doing? It's very interesting. I see the real parallel in our modern world. The way America is talking about human rights and supporting human beings, human lives, and then what they are doing practically is exactly the way this sort of propaganda is going. So, they ask you with regards to Shahr al-Haram, قُلْ قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ. It is, of course, outrageous. However, I think we take the second sort of reading, that we stop قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ, and then what you have done. Think what you have done in the past. وَسَدٌ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. You stopped people from believing in God. Sabilillah, you stop that. Wa kufrun bihi, and you are ungrateful to your Lord. You rejected the faith. Wal Masjid al Haram, and you stop people from Masjid al Haram. The Muslims could not go for Hajj until, of course, the Hudaybiyah happened and such things. Wal Masjid al Haram. وَإِخْرَاجُ أَهْلِهِ مِنْهُ, and expelling residents of Masjid al-Haram from it, as Muslimun had to leave Mecca for Medina, أَكْبَرُ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. Now you judge yourself, which one is more outrageous? Just doing fighting in Shahr al-Haram, which was made by mistake, or doing all these things that you are doing. وَقُلْ قِتَالٌ فِيهِ كَبِيرٌ وَسَدٌ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كُفْرٌ بِهِ وَالْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ وَإِخْرَاجُ أَهْلِهِ مِنْهُ أَكْبَرُ. And you created this fitna. You created this migration. You started all these battles, all these wars. You started this fitna, which is now boiling in all Hijaz, Muslims fighting non-Muslims, Mushrikun fighting Muslims. So, wal fitnatu akbaru min al-qatl. Yes, a qatl took place, of course. A killing took place. But this was due to the whole fitna that you had started. وَلَا يَزَالُونَ يُقَاتِلُونَكُمْ. Now, before going into that, you can now imagine the situation of these wholeheartedly sincere Muslims like Abdullah ibn Jahsh and those who took this mission upon them, went to close to Mecca, between Mecca and Ta'if, endangered their lives for the sake of Allah, and now coming back blamed by everyone that you violated Shahr al-Haram. You can remember, you can now think what they felt. That's why the next ayah, very interestingly, Allah supports them. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَالَّذِينَ هَاجَرُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ هَاجَرُوا وَجَاهَدُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أُولَٰئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ. Of course, they are not going to lose the mercy of Allah. وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. This mistake, Allah will forgive. because it was a mistake. However, the mischiefs of the people of Mecca, he is not going to, of course, forgive. ولا يزالون يقاتلونكم. They incessantly will fight you. حتى يردوكم عن دينكم إن استطاعوا. Until they turn you away from your religion, if they can. Now this يقاتلونكم. First of all, it means that okay, you fought. They will fight against you completely until they somehow remove your religion from the face of the earth. And also, this sort of propaganda is to dishearten the believers, is to tell them that you are not people of a standard, you are not people of values, you are not keeping any value, for example, preserving any standard. So, لا يزالون يقاتلونكم حتى يردوكم. And they want you to gradually give up. And again, this is what is happening today. Unfortunately, with Muslims, this onslaught of atheism, onslaught of secularism, onslaught of unduly supposed human rights, and Muslims one by one are leaving and their trenches and going back on their values, they are not going to stop here. That, okay, you should accept this as a value. They will fight you until they completely turn you back away from your religion. And if that happens, وَمَنْ يَرْتَدَدْ مِنْكُمْ عَنْ دِينِهِ فَيَمُتْ وَهُوَ كَافِرٌ. And whoever turns away from his faith and dies while they are kafir, فَأُولَٰئِكَ حَبِطَتْ أَعْمَالُهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. Their actions are, their works have been cancelled and failed in this world and in the next world. Now, there are two things here that we need to discuss, inshallah, in our next week session. First of all, it says whoever turns away, irtidad, irtidad, isn't it? Irtidad, or as we call it, blasphemy, or going back in one's faith. It says irtidad immediately wouldn't make a person completely void of any value. If that irtidad continues until the time of death, that then, of course, that is not forgivable. Otherwise, a mortal may repent and Allah would forgive them. What the law says is different, of course, may be different, but in the eyes of Allah, a mortad has time to repent until the time of his death. فَيَمُتْ وَهُوَ كَافِرٌ. The second thing is, أُولَٰئِكَ حَبِطَتْ أَعْمَالُهُمْ. Their actions have failed or become void. And what does that mean? Because this is a very complicated theological matter. Inshallah, we discuss this in our next week's session. وَصَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلِهِ الطَّاهِرِينَ.
Thank you much, Sheikh. So, brothers and sisters, we have about 15-20 minutes to continue the discussion and clarify any points. Any sisters or brothers? Anybody? Sisters, brothers? No? Riyaz?
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Thank you very much for that discourse. And of course, this directly relates to the situation we're seeing in Pakistan at the moment with the situation regarding the Christian lady Asia Bibi, who has a judgment from the Supreme Court, the ultimate law of the land, and then mob rule takes over and says that they want her to be killed. I think this is a terrible slight on Muslims and Islam as a whole.
You want my view on this matter? Well, I'm not very much aware of what has been happening or what is the case, but certainly the laws of irtidad, which has been traditionally enforced, may not be quite according to the Quran and Hadith. So we have to see. We have the cases which are certainly very grave, but we have cases which are judged by mistake and these things. And whatever the case, the mob should not judge. That is absolutely the ruling of Islam. The court is the final authority. The mob cannot come forward and somehow undo the ruling of the court.
Thank you. Any sisters or brothers? Any more? Yeah.
These Ghazawat, which happened during Umayyad time and what happened after that, some of them, our imams were there. They were present. So was there any views about it?
Which one? Because I
Ghazawat from the second Khalifa?
No, they never. So, except
because they were there, and did they voice any concern or objection? There were imams there.
You know, certainly the central government would have wished greatly that Imam Ali, who was the foremost warrior of Islam, take the leadership of one of these armies and military expeditions to somewhere, or take part in these battles. But we know that he didn't. And neither Imam Hassan nor Imam Hussein, they didn't take part. Now, the only thing is that when the central center of Islam, Medina, was endangered, yes, of course. For example, in the battles of Radda, when false prophets wanted to attack, Imam Ali stood by the gates of Medina defending. But he never took part in any battle initiated outside Muslim territories. On the second occasion, you know, in the first onslaught on Persians, the Muslim army inflicted with huge defeats, and many people were killed, and they retreated very badly. So there was a fear that Persians would come and take Medina. Again, Imam Ali came forward and gave his consultation. What we do so that Medina is not lost and the center of Muslim government is not lost? Because at that time, Umar ibn al-Khattab summoned all the companions, especially those who were expert in battle. What to do? We have been inflicted great defeat. And it is historically, it is recorded that Uthman ibn Affan said that we summon all the armies from all around the territories, from Yemen, from Syria, and we send them with you. You lead them and go to the battlefield. When you are there, of course, Muslims would fight with more zeal. Now, here Imam Ali gave a different consultation, which was taken up. And that was, first of all, he said, you are the leader of Muslims. You go there, you will be a target, and they will just want to kill you. And when you are killed, the army is certainly in escape. Secondly, if we summon all these armies from different parts, from Yemen, from Syria, then they would attack us from those sides. And his consultation was that bring partially, leave part of the army and bring other parts, and then send them to Persia. In these matters, yes, Imam Ali gave consultation. He took part. He was concerned. But with regards to conquests, he was not very much concerned.
Thank you.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. So I'm just, you know, the Surah Rum. So that battle took place during the Khalifa time, right? To take over the northern territories. So.
No, that battle was not, Muslims were not involved in the battle. It was a battle between Romans and Persians. And in the first place, the Persians defeated the Romans, غُلَبَتْ الرُّومِ فِي أَدْنَى الْعَرْضِ, in the close by land, which was very close to Hejaz in southern Syria. They were inflicted great defeat. And they said, وَهُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِ غَلَبِهِمْ سَيُغْلَبُونَ مِنْ بَعْدِ غَلَبِهِمْ سَيُغْلَبُونَ. And the Persians will be defeated soon by Romans. What was the concern of Muslims here, just as we have concerns here now, Russia and America are fighting, what will happen to Muslims, isn't it? These were the great powers. Of course, everyone was looking into the consequences of these battles for Muslims. And then it says, وَيَوْمَ إِذَنْ يَفْرَحُ الْمُؤْمِنُ. On that day, it gives actually a precise date for the defeats of the Persians by Romans. And that was the day where the believers rejoiced because of the Battle of Badr. In the Battle of Badr, they were victorious. Exactly on the same day, the victory came for Romans. And Allah, they say this is one of the miracles of the Quran, giving a precise date for what is happening in future. So in that battle, Muslims were not involved at all.
Thank you. Any sisters?
Assalamu alaikum, very interesting topic today. Is there some truth that after Rasulullah, there's a very famous saying that Islam has been spread by sword, especially during the Caliphate time from Saudi Arabia to Spain to China to North Africa. He said people were literally forced to convert into Islam.
That is a completely wrong idea, because people, especially because most of these people were Ahlul Kitab and Ahlul Dhamma, they were not forced to convert. As I said, even Persians, when they wanted to convert, they were somehow stopped. And they said, we do not accept your conversion. And on the other hand, no nation would convert on the sword, on the power, force. They may do it as a taqiyya or something superficially, but they will keep their faith and their belief. In Egypt, in Syria, in Persia, in Iraq, in all these territories, people were willing to convert, and they converted. You can compare this with when Mongols attacked Muslim territories and they wanted to convert everyone to their own religion. What happened? They converted to Islam themselves. The victors converted to Islam rather than the other way around. In Spain, they tried to, of course, convert people. Of course, they didn't force them, because this was not a habit. Forcing was not a habit of Muslims when they went. They were very happy to live with Christians, with Jews, with Zoroastrians, very happy. It was actually better for them rather than forcing them to convert to Islam. But because people in Spain didn't like that, eventually they left their, after they somehow kicked the Umayyads out of Spain, they went back to their own religion. Not went back to their religion, they never had converted. Even when the Umayyads were in Spain, the majority of people were non-Muslims. They did not convert. So I think this idea of people converting by force under the shadow of sword is a very wrong, it's a propaganda war actually.
Thank you. Yeah. Any brothers and sisters?
Just to pick up sister's point, I think that has to be some truth. I mean, you said that Imam Ali, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein did not support. Just look at the time of Omar. Had Imam Ali become the first caliph, history would have been different. Absolutely different in terms of expansion. You said yourself that there were many wars where it was for victory and booty, though not all of them. So those that were for victory and booty were conversion by sword, weren't they? I mean, they went, converted, or took over the locations, took over the booty, and probably forcibly.
No, they didn't want to force people to convert to something, even if it was for booties. It was in their benefit not to force people to convert.
You mean jizya was higher than
tax? Jizya was higher than tax, than zakat. Jizya was higher than zakat. And also, if these battles did not take place.
Okay, so let's see the difference between number of people converting to Islam, mm-hmm. and the land which is controlled under Islam.
Yeah.
So land controlled under Muslims impose by force.
That's true. That's true. But you take the example of Indonesia.
Yeah. I'm not saying all of it.
Now, if these battles did not take place, we cannot say that by the rule of Imam Ali and people seeing that just rule, and actually Muslims going and intermingling with people of other societies, they would not have converted to Islam.
That makes
sense. So we don't know what course the history would have taken, even because some of the father territories, when they saw that Muslims would come to take booties, they would have somehow taken a sort of guard, not letting them. But suppose Muslims just went to intermingle, to call people and have a very nice dialogue with them. Even Islam would have expanded farther away rather than just being contained in these territories.
Thank you. Sisters, any other sisters?
And this
sisters?
Is what Imam Mahdi will do. We have in Hadith that he sends emissaries to all parts of the world. He never fights to convert people to Islam. He fights Muslims so that they would not stop people to somehow see the beauty of Islam. But we don't have in any Hadith that he would fight non-Muslims to convert them to Islam.
Thank you. Any sisters or brothers? Seems to wait for the next session, shall we? Thank you. Muhammad Wali, Muhammad Salwa.